From the Lend Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of August, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities will join us from the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. He's been traveling through South Dakota today. We'll get an update on some of his morning numbers in the cornfields, even the bean fields of that state. And then as we close out our time together, we'll review last week's crop production and WASDE figures and ask Ben Brown of Missouri University Extension, along with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, what he thinks the market outlook should be for producers on both sides of the Corn Belt. There is a difference, of course, if you're in the eastern or the western side of the Corn Belt. And we'll talk about all of that on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today down 3.5 cents. It settled at 564 3/4. December at 568 3/4, forward a quarter lower. And the March corn down 3.25 at $5.76 1/4. September soybeans at $13.76, up 3. November 3.25 higher at $13.68 1/4. And January $13.78 1/4 a bushel, 3 cents higher. Bean meal $1.80 higher at $3.59.40. The bean oil at $63.29, down 43 cents. Wheat futures December at $7.75 3/4 cent higher for the soft red. The hard red December at $7.49 1/4, down 5 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures at $129.12.5 in the October, up a dollar. Feeders in that October futures 82.5 cents lower at $164.95, and the lean hogs at $89.02.47.5. Again, the October contract trading there. Gold futures for the day at $1,788.90, up $10.70. The crude oil down about $1.25. Gasoline 4 8/10 cents lower. It's at $2.06 on the RBOB. That's the wholesale price. And one other contract to take a quick look at. That's the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 35,437. It's up 17 points. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us today. Tell me a little bit about the trade in Chicago and what you've been watching.
Well, actually, slow. It seems like there's not a whole lot of interest right here at the moment, range bound. A lot of people on vacation, State Fair Saturday, beautiful weather. I had a chance to visit with a lot of listeners there. I had a great time getting caught up and getting some inside scoop on some different things. But this kind of hurry up and wait maybe, or maybe get to the September report, but just sideways type of trade. Last week we popped up December corn. It's going to close here at 68 3/4. Had a low of 64 3/4. And the reason I bring that up, we get back to about 560. That's where the market kind of broke out to the upside. So to keep the bullish enthusiasm we saw there late last week, we need to probably see the December corn stay above this 560, 565 area. Soybeans, same type of situation. 1350 seems to be a swing point on it. If we can stay above 1350, maybe we can find some positive news to keep prices northward bound here for a while. News-wise, I guess we'll go right to it. It's the Pro Farmer Crop Tour here all of a sudden. Out in Dakotas, the feed I follow on social media was projecting some corn yields in South Dakota, 190 to 144 bushels per acre, which seems pretty rich to me. But they didn't go very far outside that range, and all of a sudden the corn yields dropped below 100 bushels. Pod counts, 324. You get in that southeast area, pod counts was 1,098 versus a 1,297 last year, and the three averages 1,068. So the pod count's below last year, but above the three-year average. Corn yield's 148 versus 178 last year, and the three-year average 169. Nebraska 200. Some Indiana reports 192. Ohio 176. They had a range of anywhere from 126 to 118 bushels to the acre. So a lot of numbers right there, real short. We got to wait and see what the totals are tonight. That will give a more clearer picture of what they're looking at versus last year versus the three-year average. So it's highly variable. Where it's bad is bad, and where it's good is good. Other news, the NOPA crush report came out, 155 bushels, 155 million bushels. They were looking for 159. Right away, you can say, well, boy, that's bearish. Crush is down, but actually, I think it's bullish because they couldn't find beans to crush and plus taking some downtime. So you got one report, and it could be actually read several different ways there, but we're wrapping up. You know, the marketing year, the crush goes on for another month into 1st of October there. Otherwise, the only news we kind of picked up this morning, and it hopefully it's consistent day to day, we sold 132,000 tons of beans to unknown destination. Of course, that's earmarked Asia, of course. Not buying the million metric tons like we saw over a year ago, but as long as they keep buying beans on a consistent basis for some shipment here later on this winter, that's the key, I think, to keep this market with a demand base right under it. Future-wise, this afternoon, crop conditions report. Looking for corn conditions to be unchanged from last week. 64% good to excellent versus 64% last week. Soybean conditions are expected to be 60% good to excellent versus 60% last week. Typically, though, we get in this time of year, as the crop starts to mature, we start to see these conditions kind of stabilize or soften up a little bit in through here. So a lot of little things out there. Not anything really huge here at the moment to get this market outside the recent trade range we've been in, Todd.
You expected to stay this way until we get to the September WASD?
I think that's probably the case. I hate to say it, but yeah, it's kind of a boring feature. The interest is just kind of ho-hum in through here, and guys want to wait and see where they are with their own field, and you know, might take some actual harvest data. And we are seeing some harvest activity in Alabama and through Texas, so harvest will be here you know, before we know it for the most part. But yeah, it feels like the September report will be the next big benchmark, unless some of this world activity starts to really tip the scales and create some real uncertainty on investor confidence here.
Certainly, there are plenty of things happening in the world. Afghanistan and the Delta variant are just two.
Oh boy, yeah, yeah. It's Haiti, the earthquake. I mean, it's just a whole list of things. But agriculture-wise, we're sitting fairly good. Most producers are fairly happy with yield projections. A lot's been out in their field here, and really starting to pull back shucks, count kernels. Starting to count pods, and seems here in the eastern belt, very happy. What was it? Not last week, a year ago, we had the big wind event in Iowa. We had a big wind event in northern Illinois there. There's some spots there where the crop adjusters are going to be quite busy.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you this week on Thursday when we record Commodity Week. We look forward to that.
Very good. Looking forward to it also, Todd.
That is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Well, this week kicks off the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, and Sherman Newland is on the western leg of that tour. Again, here in the eastern Corn Belt, of course, we have an idea of what the crop looks like and that it's awfully good, although we'll check in on that during the week as well. Sherman, thank you for being with us. I take it you're in South Dakota today?
start out in Sioux Falls, and our route took us right out of Sioux Falls, first out of the gate, straight south.
Sherman Newland, of course, is with Risk Management Commodities. We talk to them regularly here on Illinois Public Media. What have you been finding this morning?
Oh, right out of the gate, our first two stops were pretty good, you know, considering what South Dakota's been through. But the Sioux Falls area had about 5 inches of rain during the month of July, so wasn't overly surprised by it. But the first couple of stops was a 190 and 206, and the bean count was pretty good in those areas as well. Corn was, you know, you could tell had moisture, but we didn't have to go very far, basically about 11 miles, 11 to 12 miles on our next turn, and we went west and got into Turner County, and things really started to drop off. We showed a 134 there, another stop, 143, kept going into Hutchinson County, had a 159, a 147, Bonhomme, a 145, and it continued to get a lot drier at that, you know, at that stage. Even came up with a 89.9, and it's been kind of in that area in the low 120s to 140s ever since on our stop. So drought's definitely hurt, you know, for sure, the way it's been going. But beans, you know, the bean count so far has been a little bit higher than the 3-year average on pods, but below last year. So a good rain would still help the beans, but I don't think corn so far along that a good raining through here wouldn't help them a whole lot at this point.
What are your expectations as you continue, and which direction are you headed now?
We are at getting ready to go through Yankton, South Dakota. So right after that, we'll cross into Nebraska. So we'll be heading south after that. So we'll make some stops in there before we head on into Lincoln. So
things should look better, you think?
I think so. From talking to the guys in Nebraska, they've caught some rain down in through there. They thought they'd be pretty decent, but you know, not wrecked. But to help them along as well, the way it looks.
You've been on this tour several years now. How do you think South Dakota compares this year to previous?
It's worse, obviously, than what I've seen in the past. I mean, last few years they've had rain up through here, so it's definitely worse other than the year when they had so much prevent plant. Now, but before we came into South Dakota, we went on into North Dakota a few days earlier prior to that. So I had a little bit of looking around in North Dakota around Fargo, you know, that west side of Minnesota as well. And they're not good. I mean, it gets really dry, especially after you get past the Red River Valley in North Dakota. Things really start to go south. And I think the farther west you go, it gets even worse.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, you bet. Thanks.
And thank you. That's Sherman Newland. He is with Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, but traveling this week on the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Now, you can stay up on that tour anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Again, they'll be going through Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and South Dakota. You can see the numbers as they're gathered and some of the tweets that those folks that are out on the tour have been posting. Again, they're at willag.org. You'll also find a running total of the numbers as they're released by Pro Farmer, statewide totals, that is, when they're updated. The first ones will come from South Dakota and Ohio, and then they'll be updated as they make their way through the week. And as we wrap up the week on Friday, we'll get an update from Brian Grady as well. He leads the tour on the eastern side and, of course, is the market analyst for Pro Farmer. We'll talk with him on Friday, and you can hear the program right here on Illinois Public Media. On this Monday, time to check in with the agricultural economist from around the Midwest. Ben Brown now joins us from University of Missouri Extension in FAPRI, the Food Agricultural Policy Research Institute there. Hey, thank you, Ben. I hear you're in Fargo, North Dakota today.
Yeah, sure am. I came up, drove up, got the chance to look some of the corn and soybeans in the western belt. It really didn't look too bad until I got to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Then as I moved further north, it just progressively kept getting worse. But really, to Sioux Falls, it wasn't too bad.
Well, put this in context with last week's WASD for me, if you could.
Well, and I've had the pleasure, or at least I had the chance. Last weekend, I went out to Ohio, got to drive through Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and come back through the northern part of those states. And then this week, of course, the western part, all the way up here to Fargo for a conference. And there is definitely a difference to compare. You know, some of the best corn I've ever seen in my life was driving across north central Illinois through Indiana and parts of Ohio. Contrast that with a lot of the corn that you know I'm seeing so far up here in the upper plains is looking a lot like what it does in Missouri when we just can't catch a Texas hurricane or you know something a storm system that's coming up through the Gulf. And it does certainly it's having issues right now through the pollination and fill stage and will continue to shrink. And I think we saw that last week, you know, maybe even not to the full extent it was what it is in last week's WASDE report. When we're looking at you know some of these upper plain states on the soybean side, North Dakota was down 28% year over year on their yield. It was you know, 24% year over year on the corn for North Dakota, and I think that's pretty reasonable given what we're seeing. And really, this has been a you know a story all year. The wheat was struggling, and we've seen you know really low, almost record low wheat conditions reports, high number of abandonment. So we should have you know expected some of this, but I think really for the corn and soybeans, it didn't look you know, to be terrible, if they could catch a rainstorm or a system coming through, here over the last couple of weeks, and they just haven't got that. And so, probably the lesson, maybe if I could put out a lesson for analysts and even myself and others is, you know, there was a chance this crop could have actually been better than what it was. The rains just never did materialize over the last 3 weeks. And as a result, we're seeing some of that deterioration. So, and you know, when we look at that national corn yield, you know, and it's showing the USDA showed us that Illinois, Indiana, Ohio are sitting on record yields. Illinois, they're at 214. You know, that's an incredible number when we look at that. And so, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio are all doing well. It was interesting, Todd. I got asked last week which number surprised me the most, if it was the 214 in Illinois, or if it was the North Dakota number that was coming in just right at 106 bushels to the acre. So, and I was interested by that question because I found both of them equally surprising. I didn't know if I'd see Illinois that high, but certainly that North Dakota number at 106 is quite a bit lower than what I would have expected before coming up here, but it certainly is dry.
How should producers take those numbers last week and put them into their marketing plan?
Yeah, so you know there's a couple of stories here, and I'm going to give you the kind of the three good things, and then maybe the two bad things, and then we're you know we can talk about implications. But when we've looked in the past, you know, a year ago we printed the low in the corn market a year ago, in the August report, and then it just continued to work its way up through the fall and into the summer, or excuse me, into the winter, into early 2021, has kind of maintained that position since then. A lot of people, you know, will say that this was a demand-driven rally, that China came in the market and just bought and bought and bought and bought. But if you actually step back and look at the numbers, it had a significant supply story to it as well. You know, we had a reduction in supply from 2020, again, due to a derecho and then a late season drought. And basically the same region we've been talking about, northwest of Iowa, South Dakota, eastern North Dakota, southwest Minnesota. And we took 1 billion bushels off our balance sheet last year by between, you know, let's just say August and by the time we got to February. This year, you know, we kind of have that same supply story as well, and the demand is staying, you know, mostly steady. And you know, I think USDA, you know, they had to make adjustments on the demand side to make the numbers work. Start signaling that, you know, we could see some higher prices rationing product. But in general, the demand story remains, you know, pretty strong. I'm gonna counter that with, you know, back in 2012 when we had the drought, we printed the high in the corn market in August of 2012 as we were heading into 13, and it continued to fall because we saw production in other parts around the world really ramp up, respond to increased price signals, and plant more product that entered the market and pushed down price. We could see that again in the United States. I'm certainly, and so this is again my two-handed comment here a little bit, you know, a positive and a negative when it comes to marketing. You know, I look at these numbers and to me, these are great marketing opportunities for producers to make some money. And if the price goes up, it's going to go up. And unfortunately, if you take advantage of the marketing opportunities and the price goes up, you're missing out. But it's a chance to lock in some profit. On the risk management side, options are really expensive. And so you have to take that into account, that if you are going to use options to capture some of that upward price potential, you're talking about paying a significant portion of your proceeds just to cover that mark. And so while I might have presented cases and chances for option use in the past, right now it's one of those that I think I'm a little bit more caution, providing a little bit more caution on the option side, just given how expensive they've become. But globally, demand is good. Even on the wheat side, where we really shocked the balance sheet last week, or USDA really shocked the balance sheet, lowering global wheat production around the globe. And then, just making some small tweaks to feed demand, both on corn and soybean, or corn and wheat, really signals that the entire feed grain complex globally has really tightened over the last 4 to 5 months, but we haven't necessarily diminished any of that feed demand, or they haven't showed that in their expectations for the next year, signaling that, there is quite a bit of demand still out there that's depending on this crop to produce feed sources and feedstocks for animals.
For those who have storage, how much the crop would you put in?
Well, so there, you look out and you're looking at some of these carries, and I've certainly started getting this question about not only how much storage should I put in, but which crop should I store? And this has a very regional story to it. And the reason I say that is, make sure you understand your local basis and how your local basis reacts. If you're in, the Western Corn Belt, for instance, there is a strong basis story presenting itself, to where any increases in that cash market might be coming from the futures market. But my guts and my hunch is that almost all that increase in cash price is going to come from basis increases or basis appreciation. That works really well when you're looking at storage, and especially when you're looking at which crops to store. Now, if you're in the Eastern Corn Belt, the market's not necessarily providing you a huge incentive to store. And there's a good chance that, if you're in a non-ethanol producing place in the Eastern Corn Belt, there's a good chance your basis could remain, relatively low compared to everybody else. And we could see, my expectation is that we're going to see this, unique shift where corn is actually moving from east to west at a much more larger geographical region than what we've seen. And just from a user standpoint, profitability of ethanol plants, my expectation is that the Eastern ethanol producers or biodiesel producers, they're going to be the ones that are seeing the real benefit, which is it's a positive, because they've had several years here of being at a competitive disadvantage to some of the ethanol producers and biodiesel producers in the upper Corn Belt, so the Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota region. So this is possibly a good year for those eastern processors to reap some benefits back. But as far as your question is store, I would seriously consider, if you're in the Western Corn Belt, really looking and evaluating how much storage you have and thinking about working that storage plan into your marketing plan.
Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
Thank you. That's Ben Brown. He's with University of Missouri Extension and the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.